Everyone, I'm here in sunny. Where I am. Hey everyone, I'm here in sunny Lombard, Illinois for the NCKP 2015. It is bright and sunny, and you can have a look at this massive building. This is the Westin out in Lombard here. And I thought I'd give you a quick tour of the venue so you can get a feeling for what it's like. So if you haven't been before, you can think about coming next time. It's been such a good trip. Let's come and have a look inside. Okay, so we're here in the main ballroom. So this is where all the big people come to speak, and we've had their concerts and all that kind of stuff. I look around, beautiful. There's about three pianos on stage, and there's just about to start a new segment. So we're going to keep moving. For every tyrant to tear for the vulnerable, in every loss. Can I grab you for a second?
Yeah, sure.
Yeah, you're on camera. So okay, this is good. Sam. This is Sam Holland. This is basically the man. This is Mr. Piano Pedagogy in America, right?
Well, that's probably overstated, but it's a nice thought.
It's been so good to meet you, so thank you very much for having me come and speak. We're just doing a quick tour of the venue, so yeah, we'll keep on moving. But great, thank you very much.
It's been great having you. Thanks for coming all this way.
No worries.
Come back and stay in touch.
I will, absolutely.
And I want to see you in Australia in a year or two.
Well, you know you're welcome to come anytime. All right.
Thank you.
We'll keep moving. Saturday, guess I won't be coming to church on Sunday. I'll be waiting for love. Waiting for love to come around. Now this is one of the coolest rooms in the whole conference. So, I don't know, there's got to be about 30 keyboards in here, all supplied by Yamaha. And on the first night, we had this awesome, like, massive jam session with Brad Sowash and Forrest Kinney and Lee LaVis. And everyone, it was really, really good. Definitely don't get this in Australia, unfortunately. This is about the biggest exhibit hall I've ever seen at a conference before. So I'm going to do a walk around. Come with me and just have a look at all the stuff that's here. It's cool, really cool. Oh, now we better stop here. This is the Australian booth. So for the first time, the Aussies have got a little place to call their own. And we've got the Fabulous. Come over. Come on, have a quick say. Sorry, Forrest.
Hey,
let's say hello. We're on Jim Topping TV here.
Here we are.
Elisa Milne.
Hi, people.
So good to have you here. I'm just doing a quick tour of the whole venue, so most important person
and
here.
A great cameraman. I don't know if everyone appreciates
No one knows who's behind the camera.
Though. Well, you know, that can be a little secret that gets revealed later, but I'm very...
You could offer a prize for some of your
like, hello, people, Australian viewers. I'm hoping that the cameraman gets to come visit.
Absolutely, yeah. Well, I'm going to have to reveal this person at the end.
At the end. I think save it as a special note.
Yeah. Yeah, all right.
That's
all
cool. Right. Bye. Bye. Have fun. Bye. Wild on Saturday. Guess I won't be
coming to church on Sunday. You're on Jim Topping TV. This is Jennifer Aquin. I'm so excited to finally meet you.
Great
after
to meet you
years
too.
Of blogging
and hear your accent.
Now I'm going to come back and have a chat to you later, but I'm just doing a bit of a tour and so introducing everyone. In Australia,
hi,
just
Australia.
Some of the most important people. So there you go. I'll speak to you soon. And so that's it. Like, I haven't shown you exactly all the different rooms here, but because there's a lot of them. But that's kind of the main gist. This place is absolutely pumping. If you haven't been to an NCKP, wherever you live in the world, highly recommend you coming along and checking it out. And before we go, I think I better just have a quick chat to my fabulous cameraman, Keith. Now, could you grab that, Dennis? There we go. Now I've got to turn it around again, Keith. Now, you've done a little soundbite for me already, so you don't have to say anything, but thank you very much for being my fantastic cameraman.
My pleasure.
It's great to have you, and we're going to swing around here just quickly, because we might as well do a quick plug for you.
Absolutely.
So we're at the Chelse publication stall, and right behind me, I think it's your stuff. Over there, that's it. So fantastic method books, anthologies, all that kind of stuff. Check out his work. It's really, really good. And before we go, I'm going to just swoop back over here because I've got to say hi to Dennis Alexander and his partner Bill. Great, I can't believe I finally met this man. It's so good to finally meet you over here. We had a coffee earlier today.
Yes.
It was great to just catch up, meet you both.
And, great for you to be here. Welcome from Australia.
Yeah, thank you. And I know Dennis is a big fan of Melbourne, so we're mates already.
Yeah. Oh, I love Melbourne. Yeah. My favorite city in Australia.
Yeah.
So this one,
yeah, that's right. You've got to come next, all right? Yeah. All right, so it's bye from me for now, and thank you to all you guys.
Thank you.
G'day and thank you for watching Tim Topham TV. This is the Piano Teachers Podcast and this is episode 11. And it's going to be all about wrapping up the news and thoughts from the NCKP, the National Conference on Keyboard Pedagogy from Chicago this year in 2015. And this is my first solo episode, so I'll be interested to see what you think. I'm just going to be giving my own ideas this time, no one to interview. But I do have a great giveaway for you today, and I've compiled a checklist of all the best resources related to the talks and the thoughts and the things that are going on at the NCKP, and you'll find a link to that on the show notes page, and other references and links and things are on there as well. And that's going to be at timtopham.com/episode11. And as usual, I would love for you to leave a review on iTunes. Just head to timtopham.com/iTunes. And read the instructions there. It's really easy. It'll take about 3 to 5 minutes maximum. And if you could spare that for me, it'll be such a great help to me. It really increases rankings and all that kind of stuff. So please leave a review if you've been watching these and enjoying them. And before I get into the details, I'd like to thank today's sponsor, which is AirTurn. And they're the manufacturers of the Bluetooth page turning unit that I use with my iPad. And I started recommending AirTurn after I trialed it out for a two piano recital that I was giving a couple of years ago. I'm not a good memorizer at all, and this was the perfect solution. So if you're out there and you have to perform music and you like perform works and you like using the music, then consider performing from the iPad. You can get little stands now, and more people are doing this. That means you don't even have to have the music rest up on the piano, so it's very unobtrusive, and side on you can barely see it. And with a page turner from AirTurn, you have complete automation. With a click of your left foot, you can turn forwards or backwards, so it gives you complete control and the ability to perform. And I tell you what, if you get one for performance, you'll definitely use it in your teaching as well. The more music you store on your iPad, the quicker you can flip through it in lessons, for demonstrations, and for performing with students, or maybe playing some two piano works yourself. AirTurn have got some great deals going on their new PED AirTurner, which is this kind of sleek, thin new design, really, really good. And they're giving all Tim Topham TV podcast listeners a very special deal on that. If you're interested, head to timtopham.com/AirTurn and you'll get all the details. So I hope you enjoyed the video walk around at the conference. It was great fun doing that. And my thanks and a shout out to Keith Snell for being the cameraman for me on that. Everyone was looking at us very oddly as we were doing it, but it was great fun. And I hope it gave you an appreciation of just how big this event is and what a great experience I've had being there, and that you would have if you will have in the future if you're able to go. And those of you listening who were there, so great to meet so many of you. I had lots of people coming up and saying, "Hey Tim, I'm a follower of your blog, and I really enjoy your ideas and that sort of thing." So that was really fulfilling for me, and I want to thank everyone who has taken the opportunity to do that. And also thank all those people who thank me via email on quite a regular basis. Obviously, it takes a fair bit of time and effort to put all this content together. And I really feel like we're building up a great community of people here on timtopham.com. And stay tuned, because I've got some cool new plans coming in the very near future around that community too. So you guys who are on my subscriber list will be first to hear about things there. And if you're not on my subscriber list, if you're watching on YouTube, then make sure you head to my website and get connected. So looking back on the NCKP, it was probably about a month ago as I record this. There's no doubt that there was two overarching themes, and that is of change and creativity. And in talking to people, it sounded like this was a bit of an unusual unusual direction for the NCKP compared to perhaps 5 or 10 years ago. And I think teachers who went to this conference would really not be able to come away with a sense that, hey, you know what, we've really got to do something different in our piano lessons. We can't just keep on doing the same thing. We can't keep on teaching the same kids in the same way with the same old music. For one, it's dead boring, and why would anyone want to do that anyway? But two, you know, kids don't necessarily want to do that anymore. And really, when you think about it, and this is what my talk was about, you know, there's so many better ways that we can often teach things too. So really that idea of change, changing up your lessons and getting creative, exploring music and the piano, and that as an avenue for students to become real lifelong learners was a big theme that came through. So I want to take you through some of the things that I did while I was there. The first day was a creativity. I went to the creativity track. I did hop. Don't tell anyone. I did kind of hop between some different tracks. There was. I'll link to the full list of what was going on. But on the first day of the conference, there was about six, perhaps, or seven different tracks that you could go to. So there was one for collegiate piano teachers. There's one for creativity. There's one for technology, etc. So you could kind of choose your focus. And I spent most of my time with a creativity track, and that was run by Bradley Sowash, Leela Viss, and Forrest Kinney. And I'll tell you what, those guys are amazing. Anyone that was there, you saw that keyboard room in my opening video. Wow, you know, the cool stuff that you can do with 30 teachers improvising on 30 different keyboards. Tribute to you, Brad, for being able to pull that together. I don't know how you did it. I love it that Leela actually opened with a quote by Sir Ken Robinson from the TED Talk. You will have seen probably his TED Talks. If you haven't, you must have been living under a rock. If you're an educator, you need to see Sir Ken Robinson. Just Google him. The first thing that will come up, I'm sure, is his TED Talk about creativity in education. And the quote that Leela used, which I love, is, "Creativity is as important in education as literacy, and we should treat it with the same status. Creativity is as important in education as literacy, and we should treat it with the same status." And so Ken Robinson's argument, of course, is that, in fact, schools do the exact opposite, and they stifle creativity, and they do it incredibly effectively, which is tremendously sad. So I love the fact that the NCKP was really encouraging people to get as creative as possible. And so Brad, Leela, and Forrest, they ran these cool sessions, which I learned heaps from, and I thought I was reasonably creative anyway. Right from the basics about chords to sort of putting progressions together and improvising and just exploring music and getting off the page. Gosh, it's, you know, the students can get so much by just stopping reading and creating, just explore it. If you're a bit lost about that, I've got this book now. I'm not an affiliate or anything, and Brad doesn't know I'm about to do this, but Brad Sowash, which is this fella. If you're watching on video, you'll be able to perhaps see. Look at that good looking guy. He and I got on really well. He's got this book called Creative Chords, which is kind of a method for teaching chords. And it's certainly not one that you would have to kind of just go, okay, I'm only going to teach with this anymore. You can supplement it. And there was just one page that I really loved. He demonstrated this in one of his sessions. And anyone can do this. This is a cool little simple creativity activity. And it's called Scaling the Chords. And pretty much what it involves is, instead of just getting kids to play scales, get them to play a chord in their left hand that follows a really simple progression. And the simple progression that he uses is, lo and behold, C, in the key of C. Let's say we're playing a C major scale, C, F, C, and G. So the primary triads. And he had some people demonstrating this that had never done it before, and it was really great fun. So I might even ask him and see if I can just, you know, put a little bit of this page up or something like that, just so people get an idea of it. He's also got an article that was in Clavier Companion about this very concept, scaling the chord. So I'll put a link to that in my download for this episode. Really great ideas, you know, simple things that you can do. And I guess one of the things I really loved about the whole conference was there was no one really kind of just throwing stuff down your throat saying, you know, you've got to revolutionize it. You've got to completely change your teaching. Don't do that. You've got to do it this way. Everyone was saying, hey, here are some cool things that you can try out. Keep teaching as you're teaching because we're all doing great things in our studios. But just try this. Just pick a student or two and give this 10 minutes and see what happens. And, you know, it's kind of amazing what things can come out of quite simple concepts. Just today, I had a student come in, a teenager who he's really busy. He does a million things. And he came in and just said, look, I'm fried. Let's do some improvising or something. And I said, yeah, absolutely. And so we went on and we just did some reharmonizing. So we picked a nice easy tune. It was Danny Boy. And we played primary triads along to it. And then we explored some other triads, some secondary triads, so the relative minors. And we explored some first inversion chords, some different styles. We were trying to convert it into a blues and then a bit of a country kind of feeling. These are all kind of really simple things that can do. And he would have learned a lot from it. In fact, probably more than he would have learned by me sort of correcting all his mistakes in his Chopin waltz. Yeehaw, let's do something fun. That's what I would be recommending all of you guys who take note of what I do and the things that I share. Don't just kind of read it and go, yeah, that sounds cool, or listen to the podcast or watch them, but actually go, just pick one thing. I know there's a lot of information in these. Just pick one thing and try it out. I'll put a link to Brad's book in the download section as well. Now, I presented on Thursday about getting the most out of teaching pop music. And I'm not going to go into too much depth because I've actually put pretty much the whole slideshow and everything I did online. And again, there'll be a link to that. But my main argument was that pop music can be an incredibly powerful lens through which to teach the foundations of music. And by foundations, I'm talking about chords and harmony. Because 90% of music, probably more, 95% of music that students play these days is based on chords, and the music they listen to, certainly. So if we can teach them a bit about chords, then they're going to have a much better understanding of music in general. And a great way to do this is pop music, because, well, they love it. It's relevant. It's motivational. And it's based on chords, so it's a great way to teach chords. So if you are interested in what I was saying and the sorts of things I was doing, I'm actually going to be running a webinar that kind of mimics what I said in that the conference presentation soon. So stay tuned to your email. I'll let you know when that comes out. And for those of you who weren't able to be there, or even if you were there and would like to kind of recap what I talked about, you can jump on that webinar and explore a little bit about it. And what I was saying. And you can actually see the slides and that sort of thing. I loved Christian Yost, who's actually on the next podcast. So look out for that. That's episode 12. I just loved one quote. She said, are you creating an instrumentalist or are you creating someone with a love for music? And this was in the context of recitals, which is what episode 12 of the podcast is going to be about too. So stay tuned for that. We'll give you a whole lot of ideas about reinventing the recital and this great idea she's got about how pop can be incorporated in that. And we actually didn't talk about this before the conference. It was just a nice synergy between our two presentations that was going to work together so well. So stay tuned for that. It's coming out very, very soon. But I just like that quote because I think a lot of the teaching that we do, if it's just like student comes in, plays something, you correct errors, move on to the next piece or sit the next exam or whatever it is, you know, yeah, we're creating an instrumentalist. We're creating someone that can play the piano and they might be able to play it quite well. But, you know, how long are they going to do that for? Are they really going to play for life like that? Maybe they will. Maybe if they could improvise and make up their own music and that sort of thing, maybe they'd play for even longer. No, I'm not sure. Now, as the sun goes down here in Melbourne, I want to mention one of the keynote addresses. And this was a little bit of an unusual case because the speaker, Dr. Edwin E. Gordon, was unfortunately unwell and unable to attend the conference. But he wrote out his words and he gave it to, I think it was Sam Holland, to read. And I'm going to provide you with a transcript in the show notes download, because I wasn't familiar with Dr. Edwin Gordon at all, but I think those of you in the States might be more familiar with him. And my golly, he has the coolest ideas that really sit really well with my own teaching and hopefully yours. And I thought I'd just read you a few quotes that really stuck out to me. I'll share this in more depth later on in a separate blog post, I think, but because it's just really, really important, I think, the things he says. So one of the quotes was, "Piano is taught to many persons by teachers who typically teach the way they were taught rather than according to an objective learning theory and current research." And absolutely, I have, you know, will always thank my teacher for all that she's done in helping me become a teacher. I was lucky enough to have that mentorship. But I've kind of built on that, and I've expanded it and modernized it in some ways and things like that. And I think we all need to make sure we do that. And here's something really important, and this links with what I was saying earlier about creativity. And that is, he talks about the five language skill vocabularies. And you might know these. In sequential order of development, they are listening, speaking, thinking, reading, and writing. And perhaps if you've learned a foreign language, you might be familiar with these. Perhaps if you've taught young children, you'd be familiar with these and this sequence. And if we put it into a musical context, the musical skill vocabularies are listening, singing and chanting, audiating and improvising, then reading, and then writing. And just as in my conference presentation, I talked about the building blocks of music and the fact that, you know, the building blocks are chords and harmony down at the bottom, and at the top of the pyramid is melody that kind of sits on top. And we start teaching at melody most of the time, don't we? You know, middle C position and all that. It's kind of the same here. When the sequential order of development of musical skills is listening first and reading fourth, perhaps we've got it around the wrong way when we start with reading all the time. And I know people listening will be saying, well, that's where Suzuki is so great. And there's other methods that definitely are focused on this listening and playing more than reading. I think that's all really good. No, I'm not a Suzuki teacher, and I haven't experienced it myself, so I don't want to comment on it, but I know that's the focus. But even any teacher can take that focus off reading and put it on creativity, and as Dr. Gordon says, audiating, which is being able to hear music in your head before it's played out loud, and improvising. We can bring those to the forefront of what we do in our lessons. Now, he goes on to talk, it wasn't a very long talk, but geez, every paragraph was just absolutely brilliant. And I loved another little thing here, which relates to how we often teach reading note by note when we really should be teaching reading as patterns. And I talked about this at the West Australian Piano Conference last year. And he says, learning letter names of detached notes to audiate music makes little more sense than teaching the alphabet, not words, to understand language. We think with words and we audiate with patterns. Tonal patterns and rhythm patterns are the words of music. And if you've ever torn your hair out when students are trying to learn pop music and they can't get the rhythms right, it's because we haven't taught them patterns, what they look like and what they feel like and the groove. Because if they can get that, bang, they can play much faster. It's the same with any kind of patterns in music as well. So I'd love to talk more about that, but I won't at the moment. It might be a future podcast or a blog post, but I will put the full article, a link to that, in the download for this episode. Now, there was also a great tech track in the pre-conference courses or course or day, And that was talking a lot about flipping the classroom and how you can use YouTube to get students to do things that would otherwise take lesson time away, get them to them at home on YouTube. And it's the way education is starting to move a little bit. There's a lot of talk about the flipped classroom. I don't see why there's not more talk about the flipped music studio. I've already blogged about how I use YouTube to flip the studio, and you can find that on my blog. But it was great to read other people and listen to other people talk about exactly the same thing and how they do it in their studios too. There are lots of opportunities for us to use technology, particularly YouTube, that's free anyway, for getting students to do things at home that they would otherwise do, that would have to take lesson time. So if you're worried or you're concerned that, you know, you love doing all this creativity and improvising and playing along with backing tracks, but there's no time, then yeah, it's a valid argument, but only in as much as you're thinking about what you're doing in your lesson times versus what you could do outside of lesson times using technology. And it's not too hard. If you've never uploaded a video to YouTube, just start an account and try one on the weekend. Just upload a dog, cat video. You'll you might become a best, you know, top viewer for all I know about cat videos. Just give it a shot. It's not very difficult these days. And gosh, there are so many opportunities for this kind of idea of flipping the classroom. So, look, I'm going to start wrapping up because I don't want to go on and on too much this episode. I just want to give you a little taste of how much I got out of it and the conference, that is. And I thought it'd be good to just chat also about online training versus face-to-face training. Most of you will know that I'm a huge advocate for online training, and my little speech just then about YouTube kind of goes to the heart of that. But I have to say, there's nothing like getting in a room full of like-minded people and just trading stories, having a chat, sharing ideas. You know, you can't beat it. And so I would just strongly encourage you, if you get the opportunity, get along to a workshop, a lecture, a conference, whatever you possibly can. I know sometimes they're expensive, but, you know, there's just so many great opportunities out there for people to get together and learn and share ideas. And hopefully in a future update, I'll be able to share some ideas about some things I've got for my community in that regard as well. Stay tuned. So today I'm going to actually leave you with a link to some interviews that I did during the conference. I just grabbed people as I could, and I do apologize, the sound isn't always amazing, but this is a time that you might want to jump on YouTube to have a listen, look at this. So if you're in the car now, just keep this in mind. You want to just jump on my YouTube channel or just Google it and have a look at this episode, because I've interviewed a few different people around the conference and I asked them three questions. It was a really quick interviews. And the three questions were, what's one thing that you'll always be thankful of your teacher teaching you, one of your teachers? You know, what's something that you've, you know, taken on board and perhaps taught your students? The second question was, what's one thing you can't do without in your studio? And the third thing was, what's one thing that you'd like teachers around the world to be doing in their studios? And so you can get have a listen to, I think there's about six or seven people that I interviewed on these. They're really, really short, but great fun to listen to. So we'll play that in just a second. But I'll just let you know that you can find all the links and the information you need and our great download for today at timtopham.com/episode11. And as always, please, if you can leave a review on iTunes, it would be great. The instructions are all on my website. If you type in timtopham.com/iTunes, you'll get a really quick instruction guide about how to do it. So guys, thanks for listening. I really appreciate that you take the time out of your schedule to listen or watch. And as I said a couple of episodes ago, please don't feel you've got to sit down on YouTube and watch this. I mean, it's just me talking to a camera, so it's not all that interesting perhaps today, apart from the video parts. One of the best places to do this is in the car or when you're walking. Some people do it at the gym, whatever it is. That's probably the best time. That's the time I consume podcast content, in the cars when you're stuck in traffic. There's nothing better. you just, time goes like that and you learn lots on the way. So anyway, without further ado, here are the interviews that I did at the National Conference on Keyboard Pedagogy 2015. Thank you to everyone that was involved in these. And I look forward to seeing you in a future episode really soon. Ciao for now, guys. Bye.
Okay, everyone, I'm here with two of the authors of Alfred's premier piano course, Ian Lancaster and Al Kowalczyk.
So I'm here with John Corey. Now, this man has the coolest voice I've ever heard, right? Wait till you hear it.
All right, so I'm here with Keith Snell. So good to meet you finally.
You too.
Keith is, at the front of so many books, so it's really great. Presenter, arranger, editor, really, really good.
Hi, guys, I'm here with Christian Yost. It's so great to finally
meet
you.
It's great to meet you too.
So, hi, everyone, I'm here with Mario O'Hara. It's so good to catch up with you again.
Yeah.
Okay, so I'm here with Leela Veer. So great to finally meet you. And I've got three questions for you, Leela.
Okay.
So the first one is, what's one thing that your teachers have taught you that you will always sort of be thankful for and perhaps be using in your own teaching?
The one thing that I remember from getting my master's degree is make it simple. There's a long stretch of something hard, cut it up in little bits and make it simple.
Beautiful. So practice.
Correct.
Yeah,
yes.
Fantastic.
Well, the one thing that I can say is off the top of my head is really learning how to count. That's okay. A big thing. Keeping yourself together with time, counting your mind, and even counting out loud. And as I do that, I kind of give it to my kids as well.
They hate it.
But yeah, they absolutely hate me. But
it's
they
important.
Appreciate later on.
Absolutely.
Definitely.
Right.
The person first. So we work with, we're teaching the student more than we're teaching music, more than we're teaching technique, more than we're teaching.
Okay, so tailoring and making sure it's about the student,
not just going to
teach my course.
Right,
yeah.
Right. And really being genuinely interested in their process.
Yeah.
So when I was working on my master's degree at Northwestern University, my teacher, Don Isaac, always said, aim with your brain and not your fingers. And it was a great way to get you freed from the keyboard and moving and dropping. And I use that at workshops and I tell my students that all the time.
Fantastic. What about you,
Ian? One of the things I remember from that pedagogy class was the teacher said, meet the students where they are and we're actually taking where you want them to be.
Fantastic. All right.
Just to embrace all knowledge or information that's kind of passed through, because you never know when some of that, something might not seem to connect with you at that particular moment there, but then it might, come down the road. And I noticed that, when I go to all these different conferences or go to all these different classes and workshops there, that there might not be a connection at that particular time there, but down the road, I would definitely, there's always been something that seems to come around and, I'm glad I went to that workshop because that really helped me out with this student.
Yeah, I had the same experience, like just absorb as much as you can.
Yeah.
You never know when it will happen. I love it.
Well, there are many things, but I think the thing that always comes first to mind is something that I really got from John Perry. And that is that he treats every student the same, from the least to the greatest. There's no difference in the way he teaches them and the way he talks to them.
Fantastic. Second one, what is one thing you could not do without in your studio?
That is an easy one, and I can't believe I'm saying this, but it would be my iPad.
You might say that.
And I'm not even a tech guru, but I like to get off the bench, I like to do other things.
She's a total tech guru.
Yeah. But the iPad, just, there's so many neat apps that are used not just for teaching something, but being creative as well.
Yeah, fantastic.
A beginning method that teaches how to work out some good teaching musicianship and style.
Okay, I like that.
Okay, mine's basic. I have only one kind of mechanical pencil that I like to write with for assignments, books, and the lesson can't start until I have that pencil in my hand.
That's not like a pencil that you...
Yeah, an automatic
mechanical
but there's
pencil.
Just like a certain brand.
Yeah, right.
I don't even know the name of it. I know it when I see it at the store and I grab it, and that's my lesson pencil.
Cool.
I have to say the only thing that I can't do without is a piano.
No.
Everything else is optional. Sorry.
I was gonna ban that as an answer, but you've got in with it, so I'll let it pass. No, it's true. It's good.
My iPad.
Yeah.
Top app?
Ooh. I like Foursquare.
Yeah. Okay. Foursquare for sheet music.
Yes.
Yeah. The one thing is a metronome. Honestly, and I was toying between the metronome and the computer, but I had to go back to the metronome. Again, with the counting, helps the kids stay in time, and it just really kind of adds a little variety to the lesson. I like to have different apps. Sometimes I use an electronic app.
Yep.
Then other times I actually use a mechanical metronome.
Yeah.
In my studio.
Brilliant. All right.
That would be my computer.
Okay.
I'm pretty useless without my computer these days. Unfortunately, I have all these different mobile devices, my iPad and my iPod Touch, and I got a Disco Beer in my studio. But a lot of it always comes around to my computer. I do a lot of communicating with students, and also. Well, that's my preferred medium is either through email or online video conferencing. We do a lot of online distance teaching through my computer, and also do a lot of MIDI applications and video editing with my computer, and that's kind of helped me stand out a little bit in this field. But it's great to see so many other teachers like yourself that are embracing technology and taking piano pedagogy into the 21st century.
Yeah, I think a lot more teachers, I'm getting the feeling this conference, a lot more teachers are starting to go, I think we need to get on board here. Mm-hmm. Yeah, which is really exciting.
And what's one thing that you would love to see teachers around the world doing in their piano lessons?
Well, after today's speech that I just heard read, he was not here, but Edwin Gordon just talked about that really improvisers have always been called the fakers, but in reality, they're not faking, they're thinking and playing, whereas readers are faking. So I wish that I would have had a whole different way of approaching piano lessons for my beginner students a long time ago, and I'm continuing to do that. So I would hope that all teachers would feel that way.
Creating. So whether that be arranging, or whether that be composing, or making music with other people, creative recital formats, performance settings, just having fun with each other.
Being inventive.
Creative, yes.
Yeah.
Innovating.
I like
doing.
It. We're on the same
doing,
page.
Yeah.
That's great.
Just something different or something new. You know, don't be afraid to try something new, because I think if you get caught in the rut of just doing the same old thing that you've been doing for like the past 10 or 15 years or even the last 5 years there, then there's a danger of being kind of complacent with your teaching there. One of the sessions that I'm presenting at here is on online teaching, and I know there's a lot of teachers who didn't see themselves as technology teachers per se, but then they said, you know what, I tried what you said there, I tried teaching this my grandchild that was 100 miles away, and we did it over Skype or FaceTime, and it was a great experience there, and we were glad that we tried it.
Yeah, great.
Using technology in some way, like if everyone had an iPad, I think that'd be great.
Yeah.
And
being able to adapt to incorporating things that will pull the student into the where they are with their technology, etc. So I think that's a crucial thing, but not at the same time at least the musicianship and the actual
great stuff.
And that's what a lot of the conference has been about, so I think we're all in agreement there.
I have to do a shameless plug for the Diamond Piano Method, and that's seriously the truth, because of its theory-based approach and how it's integrated in every single song that we do. I would love to see teachers give it a good glance and a good use of it, because I really believe in it. I've been doing it for about 5 to 6 years.
Okay, so go on, give the website a plug. What is it?
DiamondPiano.com.
Beautiful.
I think the thing I see the most when I listen to students as I travel around is I want teachers to go a little bit slower and not give music for performance that's too difficult for the student.
Well, we want them to shine, don't we?
You want them to shine, and they're going to sound better if the music is well within their grasp. There's nothing wrong with giving students something that's a challenge piece.
Yep.
But when you send them for performance, make sure it's something they can actually really be successful with.
I like it. Great ideas. Thank you very much.
You're welcome. My pleasure.
Peace.